when we are substituting accomplishment, substituting getting things done for our deeper needs, for connection, for belonging, for love, acceptance, that is always going to be hollow. It's like fast food. Mm-hmm. It's empty calories.
Welcome to Brave by Design. I'm your host, Laura Khalil. I'm an entrepreneur, coach, and speaker. I love thinking big, exploring the power of personal development, and sharing the best strategies from thought leaders and pioneers in business to empower ambitious women and allies to bravely rise and thrive. Let's get started. Hey, Brave by Design community. It's me, Laura Khalil. I wanted to pop in before you heard today's episode with a couple of notes. And the first is an audio note about today's episode. You will hear that my microphone in this episode unfortunately had some hiccups as we were recording. We didn't know about this until the episode went into editing, and my audio engineers, who are awesome, have done everything they can to clean up the audio for you. You're going to hear our guest, Buck Dodson, crystal clear, which is great because what he has to share, I don't want you to miss. But I may sound a little bit clipped during this episode, and that is just because my microphone had a life of its own, apparently, during the recording. So we did not want to scrap this episode because we absolutely wanted you to hear from Buck Dodson. I think that this is a very, very important message he has to share today. So apologies for the weird audio from my microphone. Hopefully that is not going to be an issue in future episodes. We're working on fixing that right now. But just an FYI, if I sound weird, you're not hearing things, that's really what's going on, and we've tried to fix it as much as possible. Second thing I want y'all to know about is, if you have been wondering what I have been up to lately, I want to introduce you to my new venture. It is called Podcast Brand Lab. And this is really the place where I am sharing and helping service-based businesses such as coaches, consultants, speakers, and agencies build their business and get booked solid by using podcasting as their marketing platform. This has really come out of my own experience in building Brave by Design for you all, and how it has helped me to grow my business opportunities. And so over the course of the last year, I've been learning from that. I have started to help other businesses get booked solid by using podcasting. And I would love to invite any of you who are listening to head on over to podcastbrandlab.com. You can download, I have a free download. It's a video of me describing how we built Brave by Design to become a top 125 business podcast without ads, without a huge list, and without me being a celebrity. So if that sounds like something that's of interest to you and you are a service-based business, it is targeted exactly to you. I run monthly roundtables for service-based businesses looking to get booked solid using podcasting. And it is appropriate for podcast hosts as well as those of you who are podcast guests. So if you want to do more guesting on podcasts, if you want to host your own podcast, if you want to figure out how do I have my phone ringing off the hook thanks to my podcast appearances or show, that's what I teach you at podcastbrandlab.com. So if you'd love that free download, head over to podcastbrandlab.com. You'll also be notified of our monthly roundtables. And those are totally free to attend right now. And they are a fun and interactive way for service-based business owners to really leverage podcasting to have a fantastic year and serve your clients. So friends, that's really what I have to share with you today. I'm excited for you to listen to this episode. And without further ado, let's hear from Buck Dodson. Everyone, welcome to this episode of Brave by Design. I am so excited today because it is like the gay man inside of me is screaming for joy. I have on Buck Dodson, a board certified life coach, licensed therapist who has been helping gay men realize their full potential for over 15 years. He specializes in helping his clients create a second act filled with confidence, creativity, and connection. Buck is also the creator and host of Gay Men's Life Lab. I am so excited. We can learn about Buck at buckdodson.com. You can go find that in the show notes. Buck, welcome.
Thank you so much, Laura. I'm so happy to be here.
I'm thrilled to have you. You know, I have to tell you this story. So like, I was living in San Francisco I was living there a while ago, but probably 15 years ago when I was there, you know, I was out on the town. I was newly single. I was kind of doing my thing. I was in my late 20s. I felt really different from a lot of women who were dating. Like, I couldn't really relate to them. And I had a gay male friend say to me, it's like you're a gay man trapped in the body of a straight woman. Like, I think you might be right. And it's sort of the only thing that ever made sense to me, because my dating tendencies and communication styles tend to be more masculine in how they're put out in the world. But I also think that there's probably some various, and I'm not a gay to everyone who's like listening to this. Let's just be clear. I'm not trying to usurp their very unique experience and challenges on this planet. But it is pretty unique to be a gay guy, right? And to grow up in that culture to hit 40. So can you tell us, let's just start, we're going to talk today about perfectionism. But before we get into that, I just kind of want to hear your story and how you got into doing this work and helping people create their second act.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and I love that story. Before I get into that, I love your story being in San Francisco and this, like, being a gay man in a straight woman's body, because that is, I mean, I oftentimes feel like a straight woman in a gay man's body. So I just did a podcast with some friends. We did a gays and gals happy hour, because it's like the relationship between gay men and mostly straight women is so rich and so sacred. I mean, there are whole books written about our friendships and our connections. So I just mentioned that because it's so common, that experience. And so, you know, even though I work primarily with gay men right now, I have this kind of interesting marketing niche where it's like I work with women and gay men. So because I think we have very similar experiences in a lot of ways, but so I love that. And just to, so a little bit about me and kind of what, you know, brought me into this. I became a therapist really because of my experience coming out. So when I was 15, I came out to my mom. Actually, she asked me if I was gay, which it was kind of a dead giveaway because my whole room was covered in Madonna posters. And it was like it was 1990. And so I was watching Madonna Truth or Dare like on a loop over Christmas break. And I was like, Mom, I really want to move to New York and be a Madonna dancer. And so she was like, do you think you might be gay? And so I said, well, I don't think I know. And so the next day she left a post-it on my bedroom door that said, I love you and I want you to go to counseling. And the counseling was really about, I know it sounds bad, but it was really like, I want to make sure you are okay. And I don't know really how to help you with this. So she sent me to a counselor. I was 15. This was my first experience in therapy. And, you know, he said, well, yeah, your kid's definitely gay. So that's not going to change. But that's the least of his issues. He's anxious. He's lonely. He's got a lot of shame. And he has a pretty big issue with perfectionism, and he's 15 years old. And I remember he gave me a book called The Spirituality of Imperfection. So just from the beginning, my coming out experience, coming to terms with being gay, and connecting with this really loving psychologist and going to therapy was my real sort of path to this kind of work, because I thought, wow, this is really compelling. I really love, I mean, I grew up in therapists' offices. I oftentimes say that. So,
Buck, it sounds like out experience was really, in many ways, actually pretty lucky and positive that there wasn't like as I'm understanding, there was not a major negative backlash from your family. Is that correct?
With my mom, that is true. Yeah. So, you know, I grew up with, you know, I had a single mom. My parents were divorced at that point. And so, yeah, I had a very fortunate experience with her. Now, I also grew up in Texas. So, and this was in the, you know, 80s and 90s. So it wasn't a particularly accepting place to grow up. So coming out outside of my immediate family was not as positive. But for the most part, I would say I had a good experience. because okay. so many people come out and are rejected. And I didn't right. grow up in, I mean, I did have a grandmother who told me I was going to hell, but that had to do more with something else.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah. That's another episode. But yeah, I had a positive experience with my family. And I think that actually set the stage for why I went into a healing profession and to a service profession.
I was just looking it up as you were talking because I was trying to see when Matthew Shepard was murdered. You know, we're similar ages, and it was in the 90s, a very precarious time for a lot of yes. gay men and lesbians, and I'm sure people who are just don't identify as straight, to mm-hmm. actually express who they are. Buck, I don't know if you know this about me, but I have half siblings who I discovered through genetic testing. Do you know this story?
I have seen this on your Instagram, I think.
Right.
Because okay. you shared about it, right?
Yeah, I have. And I have these 9 half siblings, and we all share a sperm donor. And what's really interesting is I'm the only one who had heterosexual parents. All of their mothers are lesbians, for the most part. And yes, they wow. couldn't...
I didn't know that part.
Okay, yes. They were lesbians. They are lesbians. And there was one doctor in Southeast Michigan who would help them get pregnant. But what's so interesting is a hearing their mother's experience of, you know, we think today of sin trying to conceive and have kids. And we're like, yeah, you go, girl, the fertilization clinic, find a best friend, whatever. But back in the 80s and prior to the 80s, that was an extremely precarious thing for a gay person to even risk their lives, their livelihoods, and their families. I think a lot of people don't realize that, especially people who are under 40, don't realize how precarious that was to actually outwardly be gay. So.
Oh, yeah. It's remarkable how much has shifted since then. But yeah, I mean, that experience for your siblings, you know, I mean, that was the common experience. Right. And, you know, and for me growing up in the, I mean, I was a teenager in the early 90s. And I mean, that was still, I mean, that was even before, like, we talk about HIV and things like mm-hmm. that. I mean, it was before Will and Grace.
Right.
You know, it was a very different time. And in a lot of ways, it was very lonely. It was a lot of us mm-hmm. really struggled. It was before social media. So we didn't have a lot of the opportunities to get online and see people who looked like us and who would say, hey, it gets better. No, all I saw were images on television that were so anti-LGBT.
Right.
Or it was just synonymous. Like my mom's concern was, you're gay, you're going to get HIV.
Right.
That was her concern about it. Or you're going to be, I remember her saying, you'll never get married. Like, I'm mm-hmm. so sad. You'll never get married. You'll never have children. Like that was part of her grief process. So when I actually did get married, I remember calling her and I remember her telling me I was in the car and I had just gotten married at the Napa County Courthouse. And she cried because she said, you know, I never shared this with you, but I just want you to remember that, like, I thought you would never get married. And so the yeah. fact that you're now married to your husband, you know, yeah. was very a milestone for her.
That's incredible. But yeah,
incredible. When I came out in 1990, you know, that was not the case.
No.
That was
2000. Was that 2008 that gay marriage passed?
It was 2015.
What? God, I thought it was way before
yeah.
then.
When okay. it became the law of the land. Yeah, because I got married legally in 2014 in California because it was legal in California,
right.
but it was still not the law of the land. So the Supreme Court passed it in 2015. So when I came out, that was 1990. So that was 25 years before that. So anyway.
What a journey.
Yeah, yeah, totally. Right. And it was, you know, I mean, I think so much for me was, I see this with in the LGBTQ community, especially with gay men, that we do go into healing professions. We do go into the service professions. Many of us become therapists, counselors, coaches,
wow.
healers, spiritual guides, you know, because I think our experience is such, it's so painful that working through that in order to come to terms with who we are mm-hmm. and to be able to live authentically, you know, we usually need to get some sort of help or guidance, or if nothing else, we want to pay it forward.
Yeah. To the next generation.
And that was definitely my story.
I love that. So we're here to talk about perfectionism, but Is perfectionism, you know, and for people who are listening, you don't need to be a gay man to make sense of this. Apply it to your life in the ways that it works, because we all suffer from forms of perfectionism. Is perfectionism a mask? Was it a mask? Is it something we use to hide behind? Or so many people exalt being a perfectionist as if like, oh, I'm so great that I want to get everything right and I don't make mistakes. What's really going on when we peel the layers of perfectionism back?
Well, I just want to make it a point, because I know this isn't a, you know, a gay men's podcast, and most of your listeners are not gay men, but this idea of perfectionism, in my experience over the last 15 years of being a therapist and a coach working with gay men, and also my own experience, we struggle so much with this idea of, let me try to be perfect to, as this mask, as you say, to protect against the vulnerability of rejection, of being told we're not good enough, of being bullied, whatever it might be. So I think that we have, in a way, an opportunity to share with non-gay people how to really recover from putting on a mask of perfectionism as a protection against showing, you know, who your real self is, and becoming, you know, showing your real self as, you know, that may have to do with being gay or sexual orientation. It may not,
right.
But I feel like we have something to offer in that regard, because we do, it's a tool, quote unquote tool, that we use oftentimes to cope with our shame, which is pretty intense. So for us to fully live, not just come out, but to fully live wholeheartedly and thrive in our lives, we really do have to recover from perfectionism. So I do think it's something we can offer to our, you know, our sisters and brothers who are not gay.
But if I can interrupt you for a second,
yeah.
What I find really interesting, and I hope that people can hear, is that these are strategies. Perfectionism is a strategy that we can employ to protect us in certain ways. Yep. And so I heard someone say, this was probably on TikTok because I've become obsessed with TikTok, but I heard someone say,
I love TikTok. Yeah, I'm addicted to it.
I heard someone say, a therapist say, that when people come into his office and they're alcoholics, you know, they're trying to deal with their alcoholism, he says, you need to first thank yourself. Alcoholism was a resource and a strategy that helped you survive and cope. And no, you don't need it anymore. And it has actually become really detrimental to your life right now. But acknowledge and thank yourself for saying, hey, I found a way to survive. And this is the way I found. And do you feel similarly about perfectionism? It's a strategy. It's a way to survive.
Yes. Yes. 100%. I'm so glad you're saying that, because I oftentimes talk to clients about perfectionism as a tool and something that we learn early on that, quote unquote, will work. It helps us. So, you know, and I use the analogy of addiction all the time. And I really want to encourage listeners who do struggle with perfectionism to think of it in a compassionate way as something that you may need to recover from for the rest of your life. You know, it's just like with someone with some sort of addiction or an eating disorder or things like that. You know, that's not something you think, oh, I'm cured and now I don't have to worry about it anymore. I encourage clients to zoom out and think of perfectionism as, you know, yes, a strategy you have used to protect yourself. It helped you survive. And now your work is to learn about it and learn about like what it was doing for you and figure out sort of how to really work with it in a compassionate way and transform it. So that way you're not, it's not consuming you. It's not taking over you. It's not controlling you. Because at one point it did work, but it doesn't work anymore, to your point. And what I see, and there are a lot of ways to understand perfectionism and to think of it as a strategy or a mindset, or if you're so inclined to think of it as an addiction, if you want to think about it that way, because it kind of is a bit of an experience. I mean, I know I'm definitely a recovering perfectionist. I work with a lot of highly perfectionist people, and it can be kind of a high, you know?
Okay. Tell me more. What is that? What is that high? What is that prove to yourself, or what does that feel like?
First of all, it's a very like revved up feeling when you're just like, I mean, if you think about perfectionism on the, you know, before it becomes really destructive, or you're aware how destructive it is, it's very much about like being productive and getting a lot done and being high achieving. And, you know, perfectionism is often rewarded in our professional lives.
Yeah.
You know,
absolutely. I mean,
and we live in a culture that really values, like, you know, the US culture certainly really values like productivity and basing our self-worth on achievement and accomplishment, and even on a just a more daily basis, how much you can get done in a day.
Like, right.
How many people, I don't know if you're like this, but I can be very attached and identified with my to-do. I love a list. And, you know, it's like, I love to check things off the list.
Yes.
But then it's like, I get into this place of like, is my whole life about to-do lists and like getting things done? Is that really living life? And that's when I know I'm actually kind of slipping a little bit and in the grips of perfectionistic thinking, because I'm getting off on getting stuff done. And it's like, ooh, yeah, that feels good. And it's a little dopamine hit. It's a little fix when I can, get that off my list. And then look at how much I got done today.
So,
which may not be anything really valuable for my business or anything or for my life, but it was like, ooh, yeah, but I went to Trader Joe's and I went to Costco and, you know, like called the bank, all this kind of stuff.
And it somehow makes you feel good, but it's still pretty hollow.
Yes, it is hollow. And that's where I really like to emphasize that perfectionism is a substitute for what you're really looking for.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Tell me more.
Yeah. So, you know, there's lots of ways to think about perfectionism. You can certainly think about it as, you know, being constantly not feeling good enough or being driven to accomplish and achieve and feeling, you know, always in your head and things like that. These are, you know, symptoms of perfectionism. But when we really drill down back to your point of like peeling back the layers, it's really a relational experience. It's about defending against needing other people. It's about defending against our needs for other people. And so when we are substituting accomplishment, substituting getting things done for our deeper needs, for connection, for belonging, for love, acceptance, that is always going to be hollow. It's like fast food. It's empty calories. But when you're hurting when you're not really conscious of your needs, or maybe you grew up in an environment where needing other people was really scary and was unsafe, or when you did show yourself, like in the experience of a lot of my gay clients, when you do show your real self and then you get rejected, then the message is, well, connection and relationships are not safe. So I'm going to go to the thing that I know, quote unquote, know I can depend on.
And I can achieve. I can achieve and I can do really well and I don't need anyone.
Yes, I don't need anyone. That's what's underneath perfectionism, is that I can get to a point where I don't need anything from anybody.
Wow. So I'm having like breakthroughs right now, Buck. Okay, I'm sitting over here like, shit. So for people who have prided themselves on their perfectionism, feel I can do it myself, I can probably do it better than you, why do they go into therapy and maybe learn about their perfectionism? What are sort of the cracks in the armor that they're beginning to experience that drive them to learn more and get help? Is it that they feel alone and isolated?
Great question. Well, that's one of the experiences, is there's usually, that emptiness that you talk about starts to become intolerable. And at a certain point, and certainly, you know, I work a lot with, as you said, people over 40. So that's, you know, my jam. You know, I'm in my mid 40s. And so I'm all about midlife. You know, when we get to midlife and we are feeling like these accomplishments and these achievements and this way of life that I've been living, which could be about, you know, trying to make a lot of money and try to have the perfect body and all that stuff, that becomes so unfulfilling. And then you start hitting that existential fear of, am I going to be alone? Am I, like, I want love. I maybe am scared of it and I don't know how to have it or give it or receive it, but I want it. Yeah. And I don't know how to be in relationship with other people. So there's usually that, or oftentimes it's, you know, just a complete breakdown of the strategy. So it may have turned into a full-blown addiction. It may have destroyed, you know, perfectionism can, it goes hand in hand oftentimes with codependency and difficulty with boundaries, and that'll destroy a marriage. It'll destroy a relationship. You know, Pia Melody, who is a codependency expert, she, and a, you know, she also works in substance abuse and in recovery. She says codependency will kill you faster than any drug.
Wow. And
yeah. So I really think of perfectionism, you know, again, from this relational context, as it's a wall against intimacy. It's, you know, it's sometimes our boundaries are walls, you know, they're impenetrable.
And so how does that relate to codependency? Are there people, so like, I'd like to go through a relationship dynamic where let's say you're in a relationship and you are like ultra perfectionist, trying to make everything just so, how does that interface with codependency?
Yeah, good question. So, well, if codependency is really about, you know, not knowing sort of what I'm, well, first of all, it's about not knowing what I'm feeling and not knowing and being very defended against kind of my own feelings, not being able to tolerate the vulnerability of being in relationship with somebody. So if my, you know, defense against that is to protect myself, to wall off, and I do that by trying to be this perfect needless person, then the only kind of, if you're actually in a relationship with someone, somehow those needs are going to get met. So you're either going to, like, you know, fixate on the other person, which is usually what happens. So that's a big hallmark of codependency, is that I'm preoccupied with you and your needs and your feelings, and I'm minimizing my own because I can't handle thinking about my own. I can't handle feeling my own. So I'm going to focus on yours.
Wow.
And then, of course, you know, related to that, try to be, maybe try to be the perfect spouse.
You know, but it's still unfulfilling because you're still walled off. And first,
it's totally off-putting too. You know, it's that's the thing. It's like perfectionism is, it wants desperately, what's underneath it is a desperate need for connection.
Right.
And it's the thing that pushes away connection. Would you want, I mean, who do you want to hang out with? The person who, like, looks, your friend who looks like they have it all together, or the one who will call you up and say, you know what, I'm feeling like my life's a mess. I don't know what I'm doing. You know, right. I just, like, we're drawn to that, not drawn to people who look like they have it all together.
That is so interesting. And so when we talk about perfectionism, and I want people to hear this, we're really talking about connection. And it sounds like first and foremost, reconnecting with who you are, reconnecting with the self and accepting the self.
Yes. And I'm really glad you said that about defining connection as connection to others, connection to self. And I want to add one more to that. It's connection to spirit. So that may be connection to a higher purpose. That may be connection to higher power, the universe, you might say God. So these are all, so yeah, connection to self, connection to others, connection to, you know, something greater than ourselves.
So you can be doing the perfect workout routine. You can look absolutely incredible. You can have, you know, the best Botox and facial rejuvenations and whatever, and you can look amazing, but on the inside, you are completely disconnected.
Yes. Right. Disconnected from your feelings.
Yeah.
Disconnected from your soul, you know, your soul spark. Yeah. Again, going back to the midlife piece, a huge part of midlife is once and for all saying, I'm going to follow this soul spark that I have inside of me, that because I'm running out of time. So if I don't start living for myself now, and doing this thing that I came here to do and make my contribution, it's not going to happen. So learning to do that and getting connected with that and being willing to say, it's probably going to be a messy process. Mm. The people are probably not going to like everything that I have to say, approve mm-hmm. of everything I have to say. And again, that's an act of challenging perfectionism.
Right. I mean, this is really interesting because when we begin to confront it, it means that you may begin to assert different boundaries as you learn what you love and what you're comfortable with and what you mm-hmm. want less of in your life. That can be surprising to people who are not used to it.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Yeah. And it's surprising on both sides. It can surprise yourself to be like, oh, I was just working with a couple yesterday and they've been together for 20 years and are just coming across a certain boundary work around, you know, setting boundaries around not feeling like they need to take care of the other person. And not feeling like they need to like always get it right. You know, it's like, oh, maybe we just like don't see this the same way and it's kind of messy. And they're sitting in that and holding that boundary with each other. And it's like, this feels weird. Like they almost were like, we feel disconnected because we're setting boundaries. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, well, that's just because this is foreign. You know, this is actually bringing you closer, but because your partner has not experienced you setting this boundary before and you have not experienced setting this boundary with him, that it feels right now like it's not bringing you closer, but in fact it is.
You know, we have an episode of Brave by Design. I just want to mention it for the listeners, which is called Boundaries as a Bridge to Connection. Mm. And I want to recommend, if you're hearing this and you're like, what the heck is this about? Like, what are you telling me? Go check out that episode as well, because by actually being authentic, being who you are and expressing that, you're showing up more fully as yourself and you're able to connect more deeply with people as you.
Yes. Yes, yes, yes.
How exciting is that?
Well, right. Exactly. Which can be, you know, a little scary. So let's be real. You know, being like all of who you are and connecting as all of who you are, that is, you know, like that's not for the faint of heart. So just embrace that it's going to be a little vulnerable. And that's where all the good stuff is.
Yeah.
You know, like you want connection and perfectionism prevents and blocks connection.
I love that, Buck. A couple more questions that I have for you. Yeah. One of the things that I have, you know, as I work on myself and I've kind of begun to experience is really a sense of less anxiety as I don't really consider myself a perfectionist. In fact, I'm probably like, I could probably do things a little better in certain ways, but I do find that as I'm clearer with boundaries, as I'm more comfortable stating who I am, as I'm more comfortable giving an enthusiastic yes or a sincere no to things, I feel less anxiety and stress at the same time because I'm not showing up as someone who isn't me. Do you notice that with clients who, as they begin to do this work, like does their stress tend to decrease or anxiety?
100%. Yeah. Yeah. There's oftentimes when I'm working with a client, and I use a lot of something called internal family systems work, which is also known as just quote unquote parts work. So when we make contact with that inner perfectionist part and begin to get to know it and understand its story and unburden it from this idea of like, oh, I've got to protect you from getting hurt in these relationships or that kind of thing, or protect you from, you know, showing all of who you are because people won't want to see that or whatever the message
right.
is. They always report like feeling like in the moment, and this is in session, you know, I feel calmer. Wow. Like I feel like more spaciousness in my heart. I feel like my shoulders are a little more relaxed. I feel like there's a release of that anxiety that you're talking because it's like we don't even realize how much we're defending, trying to protect ourselves from just like being seen.
The energy.
Yeah. And then you release all this creative energy. And that's, you know, I mean, you as a coach know that's a big goal of our coaching or, you know, one of the ways that I coach people is we're trying to release creative energy that is locked inside of you by all these masks, you know, strategies that used to work that no longer work can keep you small. And that's an amazing feeling when you can. I love seeing perfectionists. Well, I actually don't like to label people as perfectionists, but,
okay,
you know, when I work with people who struggle with perfectionism or recovering from it, I love, 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 love to see when they start to loosen that grip, or it has a little bit of a grip or less of a grip on them, and they get that relief. Like you're saying, they feel less anxious and they're like, oh, wait a second. Can I live like this?
Yeah. Isn't that cool? Like, yeah. Not always have, you know, sort of this thing around your neck that's sort of choking you off from full expression. So, Buck, well, obviously we could talk for hours. I mean, truly, like, I could just keep going. But I want to give the audience a couple takeaways. So for people who are struggling with feeling like, yes, I think I have some perfectionist tendencies, I don't really know, what is the next step? What is a step I can take to begin to confront that? What do you recommend for people who want to start facing this, who want to start getting back into connection with themselves by breaking the grip of perfectionism?
Yeah, well, it's a great question. And, you know, the first thing is to, first of all, be self-compassionate. And that is, there's a lot of research on mindful self-compassion. I encourage, and that's an actual tool. So you can Google mindful self-compassion, and there are exercises and things that you can do to just practice that. But that's the first thing that I really encourage people to do, is begin to see this with a friend, try to see it with a friendly, compassionate perspective. Like you would if you were talking with a friend who was struggling with this. You know, this is not, when you're deciding or realizing that perfectionism is something you struggle with, this is something that has been with you a really, really long time. It's not going to change overnight. And it's not anything you need to fix. It's something that I really want to encourage listeners to be gentle with themselves around, because that actually, that in and of itself is an antidote to perfectionism. So practicing mindful self-compassion. Yeah, gentleness and curiosity, and being like, I wonder what this is about. Like, I wonder, what is it that, you know, why do I feel like I need to push myself so hard?
You know, I love that, because some of the harshness when we really get down on ourselves is probably just more perfectionism.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. It's more self-attack.
Right.
It's more self-attack. So if you can begin to see it as, you know, like even just observing, you know, I usually, you know, in coaching, start clients with a self-observation practice for a couple of weeks, where it's not, you're not going to change anything. You just want to observe when you engage in perfectionistic thinking. So to use perfectionism as an example, perfectionistic thinking, or maybe strategies around perfectionism, just to begin to observe the context and where it shows up. And, you know, what was going on? What was the situation? What was I feeling in my body? How did I respond to that? And then you can begin to also think, what would have been another way if I wasn't consumed with my perfectionism in that moment? What is another way I could have responded?
Right.
How would I have liked to respond in that situation? So maybe to your point of like, I would have liked to say no.
Right.
Or I would have liked to say yes. Or, you know, there's, or even just asking yourself, even coming on here, if I come onto a podcast or even when I'm recording my own podcast, I always have to be mindful of like, ooh, I need to really like nail this and get it right. But just by noticing that thought of like, oh, yeah, that's the thought. That's my part, my inner perfectionist part trying to protect me. And so just, you know, I got it. You don't like, I love you. I know what you're trying to do. But I want to just have a conversation with Laura and connect with listeners. And my and that connection goes, to listeners is not going to be about me being perfect.
Exactly. It's about, you know, showing the messy parts and showing all those bits.
Yes. All those bits. I love that.
I have to tell you, because as we're talking, I'm remembering. So I got into therapy about 8 years ago, and I thought I was going to therapy. I bet a lot of people do this as well. They think they're going for one thing, and then they kind of are like, wait a minute. what's happening here? This is not what I thought. I came to talk about my relationship problems. Where are you going? And so I remember being in therapy and I had a somatic therapist. And so for those who don't know, she does a lot of like mind body integration type work. Like, how are you feeling in your body? And I had had
so powerful,
a very powerful, I had zero connection to my body. Part of that was how I was raised was, and this was never really explicit, but there was an implicit idea that, you know, the female body is a thing of seduction. This is bad. You know, this is for a man's pleasure. And so, you know, I had very little connection to anything happening under my neck. And so I remember going into therapy and she said, okay, I want you to just put your hands on your stomach and just breathe and see how you feel. And I did that. And I had a complete breakdown, like complete break, crying, sobbing, hysterical. I was scared of it. I didn't like it. You know, it took a really long time. And I'm sharing this story for people who are listening, who are like, you know, maybe feeling similarly or have had these kind of experiences. This is not overnight work.
No.
This takes a real, this can take a long time for you to get back into reconnection. So to Buck's point, be gentle with yourself. Be kind to yourself. Accept that, oh, if I'm having a freak out, that's okay. I can have a freak out and we can come back to it another time and, you know, you're still worthy. So, Buck.
Yes.
I just love this conversation with you.
I did too. Thank you so much, Laura. I love talking about this and it's, I really love that story. I'm sitting here just imagining that and
yeah,
it's really powerful and what a connection to self.
Yeah. And that's that whole disconnection from self, right? Is that I couldn't even face myself, this body that's keeping me alive, that's keeping me healthy and keeping me sharp. I didn't have, at that point, I was like 31 or 32. I had no relationship with it at all. And, you know, for people who follow me, especially on Instagram, I talk a lot about this now. And I know that this is something that we're not explicitly talking about on the podcast today, but I'll bring it up. I talk a lot to women about self-pleasure practices. And part of the reason I'm so into that is one, it feels good. Two, it actually helps you release chemicals that give you more confidence, that give you more self-esteem, that give you more clarity. And three, it is a self-care practice that is not rooted in a capitalist structure of forcing you to buy something to make you feel better about yourself. And it's a connection with the body. And I think those are really, really important things. So I know that's not the explicit goal of today's show, but connection with the body.
Yes. No, I actually think it relates perfectly. And I love that you're focused on that and encouraging and inviting women to connect with themselves on that level. And that is an antidote to perfectionism, really, to the like that anxiety and angst and then living in your head that is the pain of perfectionism. So connecting with your body.
Yeah.
Like, wow. Talk about.
It's a really great thing.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
And you know, the great,
powerful,
the great part, Buck, is you don't have to do it to please anyone. And the reason, so the reason I always talk about masturbation is because that's a practice. A lot of women get into this mode of like, if I'm going to have sex, I want to make sure the guy knows I had a great time, or I want to hoot and holler and whoop it up and all this stuff so that they know they did a great job and they know they can please me when often they're not pleasing you at all. And so that's, again, more disconnection. So when we masturbate, when we give self-pleasure to the body, even touching yourself, even just like touching your body and saying, oh my gosh, thank you, I love you, this feels so good. That's not for anyone. You don't have to fake it. You don't have to perform. You can just literally be with yourself and it feels really good. So
Amen to that.
I just got on my little soapbox there. It's going to be like Brave by Design. Oh my God, she's talking about it again. But I can't.
She's talking about masturbation again.
Here we go again, Laura and masturbation. But, you know.
I love that, though. It's so self-healing.
Yeah, it is.
And it's recovering from these messages that, God, I mean, women get so many messages around their body. And so, yeah, it's being disconnected and then going into these strategies we use to keep us disconnected. And then, so it's so empowering to say, like, you know what? Screw that.
Yeah.
I'm done with that.
We're not doing that.
Right. Exactly. I mean, it's going to take some time to not do that anymore, but I want to be with myself.
Yeah.
And be with other people in a way that, like, isn't about me, like, needing to perform for them.
Exactly.
And earn their love and desire. It's like, ew.
Exactly. Oh. Exactly. Buck, I am sure people are dying to learn more about you. So the podcast is called Gay Men's Life Lab. Y'all, I don't care if you're gay or straight or anything in between. It is a great show that you will get value from. But how else can people learn about you and just love you up?
Oh, I love that. Love me up. Yeah. Let's be in a love fest. They can go to buckdodson.com, and that's where you're going to get most everything you need to know about me and about working with me. And then also on Instagram, which is just Buck Dodson Coaching. And, you know, I am far from perfect on Instagram. So I'm just going to invite people to be with me in that. But yeah, Buck Dodson Coaching on Instagram and then buckdodson.com. And you can sign up for monthly email, which I call a life letter. You can read about, like, my journals and things like that. I also write, you know, I write a blog, and which is all about kind of just connecting with yourself and self-love and
I love it.
Trying to live life with a little more ease and a little more surrender. Yeah. And love. So Buck, that's where everyone can find me.
Fabulous. Thank you so much for joining us on Brave by Design.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me, Laura. It's been great.
I want to thank you for joining me. And remember to subscribe through your favorite app so you can stay up to date. And I would love your review. If you've enjoyed this episode, please leave a review and comment on Apple Podcasts. You can also keep in touch with me online. You can find me on LinkedIn, and I'm also on Instagram at Force of Badassery. All that information will be available in the show notes. Until next time, stay brave.